opens up our own history to us in a way that we have just simply never had access to before.
Highlighting Alaska history at the Library of Congress. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 14th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, good news for NSTAR customers.
This year, obviously, with the prices as far down as they've been over the year compared to last year, there's going to be a decrease.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Among the millions of maps, photographs, documents, and recordings at the Library of Congress are thousands of items related to Alaska's history. Senator Lisa Murkowski toured some of the collection's highlights Friday in honor of the state's 50th anniversary. Items on display in a palatial room of the Library of Congress, Jefferson Building, were old maps, including one from 1802 from Russia, that caught Murkowski's attention because of its lack of detail in interior Alaska.
I just find it fascinating. You look at the detail of Alaska from southeastern on up into Prince William Sound area and the Aleutian Chain, and it's all pretty detailed, and it looks pretty much like it does today. But beyond that, it disappears. It really has been relatively recent in history that we understood what our boundaries are.
Many of the items Murkowski viewed are online at the Library of Congress website, which the senator says is especially valuable to Alaskans who live so far away from Washington, D.C.
This is key for us. This opens up the world. It opens up our own history to us in a way that we have just simply never had access to before.
The Librarian of Congress, James Billington, says they're scanning thousands of photos and documents and uploading videos so people can freely access the library's materials. He says they're often used in classrooms.
Something that empowers teachers by giving them a resource that speaks to kids who are audiovisually inclined or likely to be have seen things on computers even before they've read things. You have to invade that world. Get kids to ask questions. It arouses their curiosity.
Curators from the Library of Congress had a slew of other items on display.
My name is Don Vanay. I'm a historian with the Manuscript Division. We have a number of items illustrating the history of Alaska. The great aviation pioneer Billy Mitchell, as a young lieutenant, went up to Alaska in 1901 to lay the Alaska telegraph line into the interior, first time that had been done. And these are photographs that he took on his adventures. People ask me, why wasn't he flying then? It's because the airplane had not been invented.
I'm Catherine Blood. I'm curator of fine prints at the Library of Congress. This is really wonderful. This is an original theater poster to advertise the stage play that opened at the Star Theater. And what this is, it's a chromolithograph. It's an original print, full color. It takes back to the 1897 Broadway stage. This is a melodrama called Heart of the Klondike. And so you can really see how the Gold Rush captured the sort of creative imagination of the American public. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Michael Taft, I'm head of the archives here at the American Folklife Center. We have many, many recordings that are 60, 70, 80, even 100 years old. The Tlingit recording is two cassettes that were published by the Tlingit tribe in around 1980 and 1981. Where they recorded their choir singing parts of the Orthodox liturgy. What's interesting about it is that they sing and chant these songs in Tlingit as well as in English and also in Slavonic. It really shows the coming together of different cultures.
The Alaska items at the Library of Congress are online at loc.gov. Residents in South Central Alaska can expect to pay lower natural gas rates starting in January. NSTAR Natural Gas Company's annual rate change is linked to commodity prices, and this year's prices have been much lower than the all-time high hit last year. KDLL's Ben Stanton reports.
The exact amount of the rate decrease is not known yet. NSTAR has price index contracts with oil and gas producers dating back to the 1980s. At that time, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, or RCA, approved contracts determining the rate NSTAR itself pays for gas. Each contract has a slightly different formula, and some contracts use the price of both gas and oil. Even though NSTAR buys natural gas from Cook Inlet suppliers, there's no separate index for the locally produced product. That means averages for gas produced elsewhere is used to determine how much NSTAR pays. Each fall, the company uses what's called an indexing period to gather data for those commodities. The company then bases customer rates on the amount it pays the producers. NSTAR spokesman John Sims says the market trend shows what's to come.
And when looking at oil, we use a three-month average from July through September. And then for the natural gas, we use a 36-month trailing average. You can kind of forecast it yourself to some degree. I mean, I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but you can see based on the trends in the market, what the market price is doing, you can kind of have a good idea this year, obviously, with the prices as far down as they've been over the year compared to last year, there's going to be a decrease.
The percentage of the rate decrease could be in the double digits. Customers paid record high prices this year. NSTAR increased overall rates by 22% because of record high oil and gas prices in 2008. Sims says the company does not necessarily make more money when rates are high. For instance, if people conserve gas, then less is sold. Sims also says conditions unique to Alaska have an effect on the company's bottom line.
Cook Inlet is not as robust as it used to be, and we're seeing sometimes when the weather gets cold, issues with delivering the gas. You know, basically having enough product to ship out. And the more gas you have, the more deliverability you have. You know, it's a matter of line pressure.
The deliverability challenges could be a larger issue if a rate decrease causes an increase in use. Municipalities have expressed concern about possible energy shortages this winter. Sims says that NSTAR is working with other Alaska utility companies to get a joint message to consumers about conservation and load reduction.
It's a campaign to explain what customers can do if we get into a situation where there is a need to reduce the load on the system. And hopefully we'll be able to bring that out in October, November timeframe before the winter hits.
Earlier this year, NSTAR asked the RCA for an increase of 4.7% in their delivery charge, which is a different part of the natural gas bill. Sims says that charge has not increased in 25 years. No timeline for a decision has been set. But Sim says if the RCA approves the delivery charge increase, it still most likely would be offset by this upcoming decrease to rates, which NSTAR expects to announce in November. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
Army officials say a Fort Richardson-based soldier from Illinois died a week after being attacked in Afghanistan. 20-year-old Private First Class Matthew Martinique died Friday. He was a member of a mounted patrol whose vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb September 4th in Paktika Province, Afghanistan. When the six soldiers and their lieutenant dismounted to secure the vehicle, it was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. Also killed in the attack was 2nd Lieutenant Darren Andrews of Dallas. The other soldiers were wounded. All were assigned to the paratrooper unit at Fort Richardson. Martinique joined the Army in March 2008 and was moved to the Alaska base the following September. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new cabin takes shape in Southeast.
It's a great place to hang out, go berry picking in the fall and snow machining in the winter and just hang out in the summertime.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world.
Alaska is in line for about $4 million in federal funds for Forest Service projects announced last week. The money is from the stimulus package and is in addition to $40 million in economic recovery Forest Service money already headed to Alaska. This is expected to be the last batch of Forest Service stimulus funds for Alaska, according to Rob Mangold, Director of Forest Health Protection.
These projects in Alaska are going to reduce fuel loadings in certain areas, which could make the likelihood of fires less, and if they occurred, their intensity less. So there's lives and property at stake, and the health of the forest. We want to keep the forest green and minimize the impacts of these pests and fire.
Mangold says the money is supposed to put people to work. The biggest batch, $2.2 million, will go to an Alaska Native Village seed production project in five areas of the state, including the Bethel and Yukon-Koyukuk census areas and the Ketchikan Gateway, Mat-Su, and North Slope boroughs. An additional $1.7 million will go to wildland fire management in five western states, including Alaska. States can select the specific projects, which will be carried out on state and private lands. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is getting about $1.5 million for two of its regional campuses. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
On Thursday, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development announced that four colleges and universities that serve Alaskan Native and Native Hawaiians will share $3 million in funding. The two institutions in Alaska that will receive funding are the UAF Bristol Bay and Kuskokwim campuses. The Bristol Bay campus plans on using its $734,000 to put in place its harvesting and caching resources for Bristol Bay program, which is intended to assist lower-income Alaskan Native and other residents of the area to address economic development needs. Bristol Bay Campus Director Debbie McLean says the grant money will be used on existing and new programs and services that focus on small business and micro-enterprises.
We are meeting as a group with Bristol Bay entities to try to put together some apprenticeship training.
The federal funding will also be used to allow access to job training for several high-demand jobs in Alaska, including carpentry, welding, and weatherization. McLean says well over 60% of the Bristol Bay campus's student body are Alaska Natives, and the effort to put in place additional programs and opportunities for those students fits with the campus's mission statement.
Our mission statement is to help with community development and economic development and to help preserve the cultural integrity of our area. So it is written into our mission statement.
McLean anticipates that the over $734,000 grant will be released to the campus sometime in October or early November. The other Alaska campus to receive HUD funding is the UAF Kuskokwim campus in Bethel, which is getting nearly $750,000 to fund a collaborative venture with the local cultural center, the Bethel Therapeutic Court, the Regional Adult Basic Education Center, and the Tundra Women's Coalition. The Kuskokwim campus expects the partnership will assist over 250 people to build basic job skills and to enter the workforce. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Universities and community campuses around Alaska are buzzing with a lot more activity so far this school year. Enrollment at some sites is up about 30% from last year. The downturn in the economy is certainly one factor, but as Casey Kelly reports, there are a number of reasons why more students are seeking higher education in Alaska.
It's the first week of fall semester at the University of Alaska Southeast. Spike's coffee shop outside the Egan Library on the Juneau campus is full of students taking a break from class. A few are on their laptop computers using the free Wi-Fi, and some, like marine biology major Julian Pacheco, are catching up on some reading and having a cup of coffee. A 26-year-old junior, Pacheco attended two other colleges before settling on UAS. Like many students here, she says she chose UAS because of the small class sizes.
I like the small campus. It's a good place to spend the majority of your day. You know, if you have to spend your day anywhere, it's a really nice place.
It's the same story for Jessica Davis at Homer's Kachemak Bay campus. Even though she's working on a bachelor's degree through the University of Alaska Anchorage, she's taking most of her classes in Homer.
It's a small campus, so I like the smaller classes and getting to know the teachers and the other students better.
It's early in the semester, but so far most of Alaska's universities and community campuses are reporting enrollment increases ranging from 5 to 30%. UAA has seen the total student population increase by 5%, while UAF is up nearly 7%. At UAS, enrollment in degree programs is nearly 33% higher than last year. Community campuses have seen even bigger increases. Kachemak Bay Campus Director Carol Swartz says there are 30% more students this year.
A lot more people are going back to school because of the accessibility of higher education, I think is much greater now for people here in Homer and elsewhere in Alaska.
All of this follows a nationwide trend, according to Andrew Mitelka, news editor of the Chronicle of Higher Education in Washington, D.C. Mitelka says colleges across the country are reporting record enrollment this year, and the main factor, at least nationally, seems to be the economy.
Which is driving a lot of students to go to college, community college, or others to improve their skills, to retrain for other jobs, or in some cases to ride out the recession.
Other factors play a role in the enrollment boom, including easier access to student loans and the fact there are more people of college age in the country right now. Mitelka says Alaska's upward trend also reflects what the Chronicle has seen in similar states with resource-based economies.
Many states are having huge budget deficits, but the ones that are dependent on industries like oil are not taking such a big hit to their budgets. What that means for higher education is that they're not cutting their spending on higher education, which is typically one of the first things that state lawmakers cut.
UAS Chancellor John Pugh says a healthy budget has allowed the university to put more resources into student recruitment.
We've gone all over the state. We now have a recruiter in Anchorage to cover the South Central area as well as the rail belt and the peninsula. And I think that made a huge difference on getting our message out of who we are. We're not known as well as the other two campuses in the system, and that was real helpful to do that.
Technology also helps. Pugh says many UAS students do at least some coursework through the other state campuses via distance education.
And they're taking, 6 or 9 credits through other campuses, both our own, Ketchikan and Sitka, or from Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Still, Pugh says the economy probably plays a role in at least one respect. Alaska students attending lower 48 colleges pay out-of-state tuition, which is 4 or 5 times more than University of Alaska in-state tuition. That means more Alaska high school graduates are choosing to stay in-state. In addition, the UA Scholars Program, which gives eligible Alaska high school grads $11,000 for their undergraduate education, is keeping more students at home. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
The venerable Alaska Railroad is the latest corporation to announce that hard economic times are taking a toll. Officials at the state-owned transportation utility say 1 in 5 jobs will be cut by the end of the year. APRN's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Those familiar blue and yellow engines chugging along willow-fringed tracks from Seward 2 points north may become Alaska's next endangered species if officials at Alaska Railroad Corporation follow through with a plan to cut the railroad's workforce. According to an employee-wide email message sent 2 weeks ago, Alaska Railroad President Patrick Gamble blames the nationwide economic downturn for the decision to reduce the railroad employees by 1/5. Railroad spokesman Tim Thompson would only answer no comment to questions concerning the layoffs. Thompson said that railroad officials would remain mum until affected workers got their pink slips. The plan could mean at least 140 layoffs. The railroad currently has 715 year-round employees and more during the summer season. Thompson says it is not known if the cuts would affect year-round or seasonal workers. John Binkley, chair of the Alaska Railroad Board of Directors, was not available for comment today, nor was Jeff Davies, the president of the Alaska Railroad Workers Union. An Alaska Railroad Board of Directors committee meets this week to further discuss the reductions. Layoffs are expected to start in October and to be completed completed by the end of the year. A report issued to the state in January of this year indicates that falling cargo shipments, dwindling tourism, and a drop in production at the Flint Hills refinery in North Pole have contributed to the railroad's financial losses. Conversely, the railroad posted a $13 million profit in 2008. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Another cruise company is adding Alaska to its itinerary. Disney Cruise Line on Friday announced it would make its first sailings to the state. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Disney says it will sail to Skagway, Juneau, and Ketchikan starting in 2011. The line plans 18 seven-night cruises on board the Disney Wonder. The ship will sail out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and carry up to 2,400 passengers and 950 crew members. Buckwheat Donahue of the Skagway Convention and Visitors Bureau says Disney's announcement is welcome.
And it's also nice to get some kind of news other than doom and gloom. And coupled with the Crystal Harmony coming in, that brings us, you know, another 55,000 people total into Skagway for 2011. And that makes up for over half of what we're losing for next year.
Crystal Cruises recently announced it's returning to Alaska. Its ship, the Symphony, will make 9 12-day voyages to the Inside Passage in 2011. The San Francisco-based luxury liner will stop in Juneau, Sitka, Skagway, and Ketchikan. The announcements come as Alaska tour operators contemplate a significant drop in passengers next year. Princess, Carnival, and Royal Caribbean are deploying ships elsewhere, and Holland America will carry fewer people. Tour officials estimate total passenger capacity will drop about 15%, from 1 million this year to about 850,000 next year. Lorraine Palmer of the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau says that will have an impact.
That next year, with the departures of the three ships and the reduction in the Holland America itinerary, Juneau stands to lose about $25 million in revenues from the cruise lines, the crew, the port fees collected, sales tax, all of that combined.
Lines reducing their Alaska fleet blame the state's $50 per passenger head tax imposed by a citizens initiative. Authors of the measure say the economy is a bigger factor. Donahue is part of the regional effort to recruit Disney. He says the issue did come up.
It was mentioned, but obviously it wasn't a deterrent, because if they didn't think they wouldn't make money, they wouldn't be coming up here.
The Disney Cruise Line has two ships, the Wonder and the Magic, and is best known for its Caribbean and Bahamas routes, including a private island, Castaway Cay. When the Wonder is not sailing into Alaska in 2011, it will cover a Los Angeles-based Mexican route. That leaves a smaller presence in the Florida-based cruise market. Mike Driscoll of the publication Cruise Week says those routes are getting crowded, which could drive ships back to Alaska.
It's sort of too early to tell what's going to happen, but I think a lot depends what happens in other markets, quite frankly. They have a lot of increased capacity in the Caribbean next summer at Alaska's expense. And I don't know if they can sustain that capacity increase into 2011.
Disney already offers a land-based Alaska tour, including Fairbanks, Denali National Park, and the Kenai Peninsula. In Juneau, this is Ed Schoenfeld.
A new cabin is currently being installed in the Wrangell Ranger District. Not only is it the district's first road-accessible cabin, it's also the district's first log cabin. The logs are second-growth timber from the Stargavin Valley in Sitka. KSTK's Lisa Fu caught a ride out to the Middle Ridge cabin site, talked with the building crew, and has this story.
The Middle Ridge cabin site is located 19 miles out of town. In order to get there, you drive out Zamovia Highway, follow Pat's Creek Road to Middle Road, also known as Forest Service Road 560, and head south up the mountain, way up, all the way up to 1,500 feet elevation.
Which doesn't sound like much, but it's kind of probably feel your ears popping as you go down. For Wrangell Island, it's pretty high for the road system.
That's Keith Appleman, recreation technician for the Wrangell Ranger District. He says getting to Middle Ridge involves driving on some of Wrangell Island's steepest roads. It should also involve a high-clearance vehicle, but the upside is you can drive right to the cabin. Middle Ridge is about to become the site of Wrangell's first road-accessible cabin. Appleman says it will be popular with snow machiners, but it'll also be a good recreational opportunity in the summer.
A place where people can take their family or kids and not worry about boats and tides and all that kind of stuff. And of course, it would be a lot less expensive too, at least to get there.
Although the drive to Middle Ridge can be bumpy and long, Appleman points out some worthy scenery along the way.
This is kind of a neat viewpoint here. You can look out toward, you know, Chichikov Pass and Circle Bay and look towards Rebel, and then you can actually, off to the left, you can see the back channel too.
When we finally get to Middle Ridge, the crew, a mix of AmeriCorps volunteers and paid Forest Service staff, are hard at work. They are drilling holes into the first round of logs that will be fastened to the concrete foundation. From there, they will start stacking, each round of logs getting pinned down with wood pegs to the row below. These spruce logs are second-growth timber from the Stargavin Valley in Sitka. That area was originally clear-cut in the late 60s and early 70s before it was designated a recreation area. Stargavin currently features the first log cabin to be built with this second-growth timber. Middle Ridge now has the second. The cabin was originally built back in May during a log cabin construction class, which took place at the University of Alaska's Sitka campus. After all the logs were cut, notched, and put together, they were disassembled and barged to Wrangell to be put back together again. Fairbanks resident Richard Music was one of the teachers of the log building class. He's now in Wrangell for the first week of assembling at Middle Ridge. In only a few days, he hopes to get all the logs restacked, the doors and windows cut in, and the roof put on.
All the logs are already cut and fit and labeled. You can see that on the end of each log has a number and a location. So once we get this bottom round attached securely to the foundation, stacking it will go fairly quickly.
Music was also responsible for the construction and assembling of the log cabin in Stargavin, which has received high use since its completion. Music anticipates the same for Middle Ridge.
Once people find out about it and come up, it's a great place to hang out, go berry picking in the fall and snow machining in the winter, and just hang out in the summertime. And it's road accessible.
The exterior of the cabin, as well as the installation of the wood stove and the outhouse, are due for completion by the end of October. The Forest Service hopes the interior of the cabin, like the bunk beds, the shelves, and the counters, will be built through a partnership with Wrangell High School. The final completion of the Middle Ridge cabin site, including a wood shed and picnic tables, won't be done until next year. In Wrangell, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ben Stanton in Kenai, Mike Mason in Dillingham, Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Lisa Fu in Wrangell. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Oregon has set a deadline for filing claims for anyone who has suffered injury by sexual, mental, or physical abuse or misconduct by a Jesuit priest or others, claiming the Society of Jesus Oregon Province has some responsibility. The deadline is November 30, 2009. Proof of claim forms are available online or by calling 1-888-909-0100. This message is sponsored by the Society of Jesus Oregon Province.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.